You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Tonight on the Cooligans, we are talking about the U.S. U-23s taking on against soccer powerhouses, Dominican Republic. Let's go. We also discuss Everton and why Zach Steffen has to apologize.
That's right. Plus, we talked to Stu Holden of Fox Sports. We talked to him everything from his abs, his hair. Also, his playing career comes up a little bit and the U.S. qualifying for the Olympics. That and more today on the Cooligans!
Yo, it's me, Dave Vianich here, and I've been hanging out with the Cooligans, having a nice, and I hope you've been having a nice too.
Yeah, baby!
Yes. Yes. Another week. We're still here.
That's right. We ain't going nowhere. Bruh, okay. Where'd you think we were going to go anyway? Everything's closed.
Okay.
Except Miami. Miami might be a little too open, bruh.
South Beach is lit right now. Okay.
More like lit up. I mean, it is wild down there. Shouts to all of our friends that are down there. Do not come back and talk to us for 2 weeks, bruh.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero-Rose.
All right, we are your favorite stand-up comedians that host the funniest soccer show that has ever lived right here on Fubo Sports Network.
That's right. It also happens to be the gulliest, unless someone right now on South Beach has a show. That might be a little bit more gully than us right now, but
okay, yeah,
we
so
are.
Someone on South Beach is coming for the title.
Speaking of, hey, thank you so much for wearing Wifey's shirt. Now, Christian is wearing the Nah, I'm Good shirt, which is a The Donna special at THE DONAS, The Donna.
Okay.
Check them out.
I mean, I was going to get to it, but Alexis was like, no, she's going to be really upset if we don't get to it immediately.
Bro, if she thought for 1 second I forgot and you brought it up and I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. Nah. I never hear the end of it.
Shout out to The Donnas. Thank you for the gear. I mean, I'm wearing it. You know, her husband.
I wore my NYC Ain't Dead shirt already. Y'all done seen it already.
Okay. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We're excited about today's show, of course, because we're going to be joined by the homie Stu Holden of
Yo.
Fox Sports, Fox Soccer, played for the U.S. men's national team, the best frosted tips in the game. We all know
okay.
that.
Okay, he got that in sync head. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah, that's I feel like that's a condition, you know? It's an official
yeah,
one, too.
Yeah, yeah. Doctors are figuring out ways to treat it.
So, a lot to talk about today. Speaking of U.S. men's national team, let's get into a little bit what's going on with the U.S. men's national team, with the youth national team, the U-23s playing in the Olympics. We got Zach Steffen playing against Everton. You know, there's a lot to start with.
But you ain't getting a lot of respect this weekend, bro.
Because, yes, the U.S. U-23s played against the Dominican Republic U-23s. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're trying to go to Tokyo, to the Olympics, right? And you know, the Americans always getting in the way of Dominicans thriving, all right?
Right. I mean, again, you know, this is how it's told over in the Dominican Republic. This is how DR is phrasing
right.
it.
You the know? History books are going to be written a little differently, okay? Uh-huh.
You may hear it like, you know, the U.S. are a better team here. That might be how you hear it, you know, over in this imperial nation, you know?
Okay, yeah, the conquerors doing what they do, but no. The U.S. Defeat Dominican Republic 4-0. But look, let's also give credit where credit is due, because Dominican Republic held a 0-0 draw for the first 45 minutes. This is
as far as anyone's concerned. That's a W. That's a W for the DR right there.
That was a huge first half, especially coming off the you know, the loss to Mexico in the first match. So,
and no disrespect to you, but I think the bigger story here is obviously the biggest story here is the first half for the DR. The second story here is the U.S. hasn't looked that They haven't looked at qualifying in the first two matches. You know what I mean?
Well, look, they, you know, obviously they won the two matches that they should have won. They won 1-0 to Costa Rica, and they needed a good result against against Dominican Republic to move through the next match.
And they did end up getting that. They did end up getting a good result,
but
right?
But look, it is that question. Is the Dominican Republic the next soccer powerhouse that's going to take over CONCACAF?
Or, how did you read my mind? Of course, that's the next question.
Were the U.S. Just really not playing to their highest level?
So I think the question comes in, you know, and I think it's all the signs point to Jason Christ. Like, what is happening? You know, why did the subs come in? And were there tactical changes made? Were the players what was the formation? What was the system that was put upon the starting squad? Is Jackson Yule in the right position? It seems to be like he's the link that everyone's trying to attack. I think that happened in the Costa Rica match and happened again in the DR match. So there's a lot of questions. You know, we do have Stu Holden on. So, you know, maybe he'll give us a little bit more insight as to how the U.S. team is playing.
Yeah. And we'll figure out, you know, how they're going to line up against Mexico and stuff like that. So the other match and highlight another U.S. men's national team player that's doing pretty well is Zach Steffen, friend of the show. You know, was in goal against Everton for the FA Cup.
He knows you're an Everton fan. Let me tell you something. He didn't let up. You know what I mean? It's almost like he did it on purpose. Clean sheet.
You know, it's difficult to forgive him, I will do my best. Look, it was pretty much Everton's last opportunity for a trophy this season. I mean, unless something happens that's insane and we end up winning the league. I don't see that happening. But now the focus for Everton is obviously to try to get into Europe. It's not impossible.
You got to get in the top five. That's it. Yeah. That's literally all you have. That's all you have right now. But also, I think everyone would say this is a better season than anyone thought they would have at this point with Carlo Ancelotti. It seemed to me like Carlo was on a 3 to 4 year plan to get to this point, and he's already here. So I think you guys are doing pretty good. Oh. In more U.S. men's national team news. I said news. Sergiño Dest, bruh.
That's right.
Scoring a brace for Barca. He said, "Yo, Messi, relax, bruh. I got this."
Yo, he was just like
beat up.
He was basically like, "Yo, Leo, give me the rock, all right? Because I'm gonna take care of this." But no, we've never seen an American player. Obviously he's the first American to play for Barcelona. But to get a brace is pretty insane. And also
he's a defender. I mean, come on now.
Yeah. And also we have to give credit, to Barcelona because they are in second place at the moment when, I mean, look at the footage just from a couple weeks ago of our show where we're like, Barca's done, Messi's already, he's ready to go.
Messi left already, you know?
and the fact that they were able to turn things around and also that some of the other teams above them, you know, wavering a little bit, there's a real, real opportunity for Barca to have the season that they started with and end up winning La Liga, which would be insane.
It's crazy. Well, we've said it from the beginning. Ronald Koeman, clearly the right choice, right? We've never wavered on that point.
Don't look back.
Don't go back and listen or look. Don't watch the shows from the back. Just trust me when I tell you, we've always have respect for Ronald Koeman's decision-making.
He was the Everton manager, so he's great.
He's been great his whole career. And don't forget, we have Stu Holden coming up in a little bit, which is dope. Fox News lead analyst, which is kind of cool. Or is he college commentator? What is he again? Whatever. You guys know who he is. He's got blonde hair. So you guys know who he is. there's unfortunately, we have to bring up this topic yet again. We do not want to talk about this, but Europe keeps Europing. Why are they Europing so much?
I mean, if we need to, you know, start one of those counters, how many days since, you know, racism in soccer, we got to start back to zero.
We're back to that zero. Slavia Prague, a player. I don't know the player's name. It might end in an IC. his last name. He covered his mouth and, Kamara, who plays for Rangers after beating Rangers, he got kind of in his face. and called him the N-word, or there was racial slur used against him. Everyone's assuming it was the N-word. And you saw from his reaction right away that it was not okay. And there's also black players on Slavia Prague. Like, I can't imagine what they're going through at this moment as well. But there's been a huge outpour of support for Kamara, even in the Old Firm. Two teams that historically despise each other, Rangers and Celtic. Scott Brown, the captain of Celtic, came over and gave Kamara a handshake, showed a little bit of camaraderie there, which is absolutely amazing. Also, Steven Gerrard, LA Galaxy legend, that's what he's remembered most for. He came out and right after the match just showed incredible support for Kamara. The fans of Slavia Prague saw all of this and were like, nah, let's take it the other way. And just absolute trash, held up a banner that said Kamara is just a, and spelled out the N-word. I mean, what should happen to Slavia Prague? That's my question.
Yeah, I really appreciated Steven Gerrard's comments, just because it did show a sign of true empathy of, like, yeah, you know, and to a degree of like, look, if you say that to one of my players, you're saying that to all of us. You know what I mean? There's never going to be an answer. I you know, at this point, especially coming from another player, you're kneeling at the beginning of match. I don't know if they did it in the beginning of this one. I assume so, because it was a Europa League match. You kneel, you're acknowledging you know, the racial inequities that exist, the things that are going on. They players themselves are dealing with, like, or they're being informed, they're being educated, there's no excuse.
Yeah, but clearly some of them don't care, and this is clearly one of them. Like, this poison isn't going to go away because you make the players kneel. I like that gesture, and I think it's important, and maybe that has changed some people's minds. Maybe some people have taken a look at some of this footage and have taken a look at some of the educational objects that are, like, items that you're talking about, and have said, you know what, I'm being an idiot and I shouldn't be this way. This one player and this group of fans clearly ain't getting the message.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, when if you're covering your mouth, you know it's because you don't want to get caught saying something that is bad.
There's a reason why the mafia covers their mouth when they speak. It's because they're not saying, like, yo, is your mom okay? Is she doing good? They're saying something that shouldn't be said.
They don't want the feds to see what they're saying, okay?
He's out here peshying because not something good is being said, you know?
Yeah, look, there's obviously no excuse. The boldness, you know, and this happens a lot in Eastern Europe. I mean, we saw Croatia a couple years ago couldn't even have fans at the match because they put a damn
their field design, they put
a swastika in the damn field. Like, it's unreal. Like, that the degree that it goes to. So there has to be some sort of penalty.
What is the punishment? What do you think the punishment should be? Because I think they should be and it has nothing to do with Arsenal playing them. I know that might be the joke, but no, I honestly think they should be banned, or they should have. Something should happen. You can't ban the fans because they are already, there's no one in the stadium anyway.
Yeah.
So I think the team should be docked points, should be banned. Something should happen.
Yeah. I mean, there has to be some fine. It's like a difficult thing because, but there it has to be made an example of. Like, literally, it wasn't all the players of Slavia Prague that did something wrong. It was one particular player, but they have to, look, he's going to ruin it for everyone else. There has to be
an example has to be made for sure.
FIFA, UEFA, they have to take a bold stance. And this is my issue in general with this stuff, is that nobody wants to take a tough stance because they don't want to deal with the repercussions of just making that decision, whether it's banning them, whether it's fining them. There are people who don't care about, you know, they're like, I just want to live my racist life. And
yeah, but hold on, to your point, it might be like, this isn't the domestic league. This is a European competition. Yeah. So UEFA is in charge of this. UEFA can come down and say, you're no longer allowed to be in it. You're banned this year and next year for those actions. And I know it was just the one player, but I didn't see enough from you as a club to suggest you're taking care of or you're punishing that player correctly. You stood back and said, nah, we didn't hear nothing. I mean, the guy covered his mouth. What do you, how do we know?
Can't prove
you
anything.
Yeah. That's not how you handle this. And then your fans came out and spelled it out.
Yeah, I think it pretty much says where they stand.
Even if the player didn't do that, if the fans had done that, the club should still be punished.
I agree, 100% agree. I'm hoping they do something, because this is a the more they are silent on this, it is just, I mean, it's complicit at this point. Like you can't not do anything. So I'm hoping very much there is some sort of change. But
Arsenal slapped them up, bruh.
that's a start. You know, mm-hmm. We'll go from there, slapping them up, and then moving on. All right, I do want to talk about the Women's Super League, the Barclays Women's Super League out in the UK, and it's interesting because they got a new TV deal.
They got the largest TV deal ever in the history of women's professional sports. Supposedly. I don't think it's been confirmed yet at this point.
No, I went through all the books. I have all the papers in front of me.
You heard it here first, folks. He snooped through the whole thing. We're good.
That's reportedly it is the highest TV contract for women's professional sports, which is huge. I mean, the cool thing about this is that you hope, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. You hope that for the NWSL, it pushes the league to maybe get a better deal, because now,
or at least inspires the TV folks here to offer a better deal, because I'm sure the NWSL is looking for a better deal. It's what these teams do, is what these leagues do. But you would hope that this would inspire some of the sports programming folks here to say, like, wait a minute. Yeah. There's interest in women's soccer. Well, let's look at the ratings for the NWSL. Well, it's actually pretty great. What are we doing?
I mean, right now they're currently, with CBS or on Paramount Plus, where you can watch all the games. Obviously, the Challenge Cup is coming up soon, things like that. But now, because of this, do you think that there's going to be more money going around with a lot of the Super League clubs? Do you think a couple players get poached and end up going more than that are already there now? Like, there's a lot of U.S. Women's National Team stars that are currently playing for Women's Super League clubs.
Yeah, let's talk about it. How much of this bag is Rose Lavelle going to get? That's what I'm interested in. How much of this bag is Sam Mewis going to get? How much is Kristen Press going to get, you know? Yeah, Toby Heath better get a big old bag, you know? She's got too much sauce. She needs somewhere to put it.
Okay, and you pay them in American dollars, all right?
We don't take none of that money. Why you got this lady with a crown on your head on your money? Why is it in this odd shape, my G? I need green.
I think there's going to be an opportunity for players in the Super League just to get more money overall, whether they are, you know, foreign players or not. But it makes me think that the possibility of players like Tobin Heath and Kristen Press, who play for Manchester United, will never come back to NWSL. I mean, what is their true incentive? I mean, look, I would say NWSL is a better league overall.
But this also shifts, this should shift the incentive. To your point, if the only people that can play in the Women's Super League from America are players that are big names on the national team, and you would assume that a good portion of those might be able to get poached by the Women's Super League, then the interest for the NWSL would be to build stars that are currently here. So now you may look at an interest in more development, right? Which I know there's an incredible system for developing youth players in the women's game already, but now you're going to look at more and more sort of lifting up those players that aren't quite yet in the women's national team or able to go, and making them the new superstars. I think this could have a trickle-down effect in a larger way that actually benefits NWSL. Obviously, you want the big names to stay here, and I think some of them will. Like, I don't think Megan Rapinoe's going to go over there. I think she's happy here.
There's rumors that they... Who wants it? It's somebody in Spain. I think Barcelona. Oh, no, Real Madrid. I think there's opportunity. Megan Rapinoe is going to be playing until she's like 53. Okay.
Yeah. The contracts just keep coming in.
So the next couple of years are going to be really interesting for the league, where the players decide to stay, because obviously, the league minimum in NWSL is not super, super high. It's going up year after year, but if there's opportunity for more money, in England, you know, there's competition there.
But
for
also, if you want our players, we know you got the money now, so we're going to ask for some big
transfer
bucks.
Fees, fam.
All of a sudden, our players are more expensive, England. I think you got it, WSL. We got Stu Holden when we get back right after this. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I just want to bring in with a word from one of our sponsors, us, and you guys being Gully Squad. And you know what? Maybe I keep saying you. Maybe you're listening to this and you're not a member of Gully Squad and you're wondering why. Well, I've given you amazing, reasons why I've told you the Slack channel is absolutely amazing. Here's another reason why I think Gully Squad is absolutely incredible and why you should join is because whenever we have guests and we've had everything from World Cup winners to MLS, Premier League, and WSL, legends of the game, we've had incredible, incredible players on our show, incredible guests from comedians like Roy Wood Jr. of The Daily Show, incredible guests. The only people who get to ask them questions besides Christian and I are Gully Squad. Gully Squad finds out early who our guests are, and they get the chance to put those questions in the Slack. Those are the only other questions we ever ask. If you want to be one of those folks, if you want to join the amazing Slack channel, if you want to get to become a part of this community, if you want to start, cooperating with some of the Gulliest kit, the kit that they're making for themselves, if you want to drop some knowledge in the coffee or the beer and wine liquor section or the food porn section, all that, you got to join Gully Squad. Most importantly, if you also want to ask questions of our guests, you either got to become a cooligan, which is impossible, right? Unless you're funnier than Christian, then try out, let me know. Or you got to join Gully Squad and join that Slack community. So if you want to do that, just go to shoutstous.com. Again, that's shoutstous.com. Or you can simply go to soccercooligans.com/Gully Squad. In fact, if you go to soccercooligans.com, it's our website. We worked really hard on it. We think it's really nice. And all over the place, you'll find buttons to join Gully Squad. So do it today. And welcome back to the Cooligans Living Room FC here on Fubo Sports Network. And Christian, our guest, is finally here. And you might not know this. And I'm, by the way, this is just off the dome. This is not something that Fox sent me to say. But apparently for the first time in English language television history, Fox Sports presents a full slate of matches and extensive studio coverage of the CONCACAF Men's Olympic Qualifying Championship across FS1 and FS2.
Wow, Alexis, you nailed that. And it's impressive that you just got it right up there. Are you on some sort of mailing list with Fox Sports? I don't know.
You know what it is? It's just that I'm so passionate about their sports coverage that I'm also excited that we get to talk to one of our favorite guests on the show. I believe a fourth time. I think the only guest who might best him is his co-host, his co-commentator, his lead, the other guy, John Strong. But ladies and gentlemen, the lead analyst for Fox Sports and what a great friend of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together, unless you're driving, and even if you are, pull over, pull up the e-brake, and put your hands together for the one, the only, Stu Holden, everybody!
Yeah, there we go. What about, like, the finger snaps? If I remember last, it's going to be tough to top the last time I was on your show. We played FIFA. I mean, we were like live in studio in New York. Remember we could hang out with each other, guys?
Yeah. You know, if you showed up to my apartment right now, I'd be like, 6 feet, Stu, what are you doing?
Okay, we're playing FIFA on Xbox Live. You better stay away from me. Thank you so much for joining us. Obviously, we have a lot to talk about when it comes to Olympic qualifying that are currently going on right now. Obviously, the next match coming up is going to be U.S. against Mexico. Huge match. But before we talk about soccer, can we just talk about how you are feeling, your knee? You just a couple hours ago, probably, you just had knee surgery.
Well, Alexis, first of all, you nailed the read. Thank you. We're going to have all these matches on television, FS1, FS2. But the second part and why I wanted to come on the show is I'm coming out of retirement. That's why I got my surgery yesterday. I saw that Yunus Musa, he committed to the United States. Like, we have all these great young players. I figured maybe I could be an overage player for the Olympics if we qualify. So I was like, Doc, I need my 14th surgery on my left knee. Yeah. Get me repaired. Like, let's get back on the train. No holding back is coming back. It's all happening. Thankfully, I feel better. I had the surgery yesterday. I think it's my 14th surgery overall on my knees. Wear and tear, guys. Somebody asked me on Twitter yesterday, would you do it all over again, knowing that you'd have to go through this? 1,000% yes. You put your body through what it is. I had some great experiences, but now I feel like a 70-year-old man with a cane. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to need as many surgeries as you had on your knees when I get older, and I didn't get to play soccer at all. So yeah, definitely do it if you can.
At this point, point, it's just like, you know, you're tearing an MCL just chasing your kids around. You know what I
mean? Yeah,
like,
well, that's what I texted my buddy. I said, well, I went in for, you know, my 150,000 mile tune up on my left knee, a clean out, like 4 to 6 weeks. Are you kidding me? That's nothing. You know, get the cigar out.
You're like, this is nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is exciting because it's the U23s. And I haven't said this in a while, but, like, I'm excited to see who's next in the men's national team. Normally, I'm saying, could we bring up the next group? Because this is frustrating. I mean, who are you looking forward to? Who are the fans? Who should they be looking out? Because there's some really great names on here.
Yeah, look, the Olympics is something we haven't achieved since 2008, and that's why I wore my cheesy Olympic half zip here. Like, you know, I went to the Olympics, and all I got was this wonderful sweater. But look, you talk about these missed generations for the United States and these number of players that didn't have the opportunity to play in a major tournament that's a developmental tournament that then you go on to the full team. Look at, back in 2000 in the Olympics, then 2002, we had our best ever World Cup run. 2008, then in 2010, we won the group. You know, we got out. We lost to Ghana, but still, it's an important developmental step. So now you have this team. As always, the expectation, the base level expectation of the United States is qualify for the Olympics. If you don't do that, it's a failure. The shame is you don't have Pulisic, McKennie, Gio Reyna, Josh Sargent, all these guys that would be our A team for the U23s. They can't be a part of qualifying. So still, you have some really exciting names as part of this group, you know, guys like Cardoso and Jackson Yule and Kessler in the back. And, you know, you can go down the list. We still have a pretty good group with Giannis going forward that you still say this team needs to qualify for the Olympics. And there's a lot of pressure, I feel, on Jason Kreis to pull that off.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing I would add, like the times that we have missed the Olympics, it has felt a little bit like it's been... We've looked past it. Maybe, you know, Americans, like, we only care when we qualify. And when we don't, it's like, you know, the pressure's not really there. But this
we
feels
didn't
a
want
little...
it anyway.
But this feels a little bit different. But can you speak a little bit to that pressure that Jason Kreis is actually feeling? Because this time around, it feels like if we do not qualify for the Olympics, there will be a bigger consequence.
Yeah, I've actually been saying this about not just the Olympic team, but the full men's national team as well. The hype, you guys feel it, you know, the excitement around this team and the number of players playing in Europe. But yet this year we're going to find out a lot about this group and how far this team has actually come, because guess what? There's finally competitive games that mean something, games that, you know, that get the competitive juices flowing, that you know, then there becomes the pressure if you don't qualify, what comes next? This is the first real one. Before then, you have Nation League, Gold Cup, World Cup qualifiers in the fall where we can really judge this team and say, okay, how far have we come? So to your guys' point, you have this group stage. The United States are not an easy group. They have Mexico, Costa Rica, and the Dominican Republic. And then if you're part of the top two, then it comes to a one-off game. We had that back in 2008. I remember feeling that pressure against Canada. Now we won. Freddie Adu scored two goals in that game, and Sasha Kljestan the other one. But for the U.S., to get to that stage, and then it's a one-off game, you know, and then you find out, do these guys have the mentality? Do these guys have the ability in a tough game to really figure it out beyond their talent to grind it out and get a result and perform in a one-off game that says we're going to Japan or we're not? And that's what I'm excited to see if we get to that point.
If it's, to me, it seems like our senior team is a U23 team at this point. It's so young. Do you think the U.S. sort of is going to suffer with that, being able to start some of those? And don't you think to some degree there was an opportunity to maybe play some of those guys in this and let them get some of this big competition working before some of the bigger or more major competitions like the Gold Cup and the World Cup?
Yeah, well, I mean, guys, it was a challenge coming into the Olympics, even going pre-pandemic, pre-COVID, of what this summer would have looked like in 2020. And then you fast forward and you log jam the calendar. The U23s haven't played a competitive game being a friendly for them since 2019 against Brazil, and where we lost 1-0. I mean, 2019, we're in 2021 now. I know 2020 just feels like a throwaway year. But in saying that, you know, Greg Berhalter at the whiteboard with his staff, with Jason Kreis, trying to figure out this roster, the emerging players, the guys that, you know, weren't part of the roster last March have now worked their way into the team. Guys like Kessler, who had a great rookie season in MLS, now he might be starting for this team. And I think that's the challenge of, you know, the friendlies towards the end of last year, the friendly for the United States against Trinidad and Tobago, which was mostly U23, U24, what it's going to be, because you had to fast forward a year. Those types of guys have had full national team experience only trying to get them ready for this experience. But still, yeah. Jason Christ was not the coach. He was a part of the team, but he still wasn't the head coach. And now you roll this team out. You've been training down in Mexico, and you have a tough couple of games. And then all of a sudden you're playing Mexico with a lot on the line for where you're going to finish in the group. So it's going to be exciting. And guess what, guys? I don't think it's going to look pretty the first couple of games, but can the U.S. figure it out quickly? That's going to be their biggest challenge.
Okay.
How quickly can we play DR? No offense, Christian.
I mean, look, I don't want it. Would be difficult if Dominican Republic is the reason the U.S. does not make it to the Olympics. I mean, it'd be bittersweet at the very least. We are here with the homie Stu Holden, going to be calling matches on Fox Sports of the U.S. Men's Olympic qualifying tournament. Stu, we have some questions from Gully Squad, our supporters group. You are familiar. You also have a Gully shirt.
I have a Gully shirt. I do. I have the Gully shirt. I should have had it underneath this cheesy half zip, but you know,
it's all good.
What a great reveal!
Yeah. So we have a couple questions. So let's start with Thomas Thorne. He asked about Christian Pulisic. He said, "How do you feel about his lack of starts at Chelsea? And do you think this time is affecting his role on the national team?" I don't think that, but so in general, with what's been going on at Chelsea for Christian Pulisic, how do you feel about that? Because obviously some people have been concerned.
Yeah, it's concerning a little bit. Also a little disappointing because I felt like Christian Pulisic was, you know, getting through some of those injury problems he had early in the year, was starting to reemerge, get consistent minutes, starting to produce again. And like, look, I mean, this is part of being at a big club in the Premier League where managers, you know, they get changed out like silverware at times, you know, out the new one, here comes the next one. On paper, initially, it looked like, okay, Thomas Tuchel, here was his coach at Dortmund, a guy that knows him well. But if you go back to that, Tuchel didn't necessarily trust him in the same way, and he didn't always fit into his system. And I think you're seeing that. Like, Pulisic, when he got the start the other day, was playing as a right wing back, having to track back defensively, then having to get into the attack. It doesn't suit his strengths. I'd like to see Tuchel give him a run as one of those two number 10s, where he has the ability to be creative again and get in behind. Chelsea is stacked with talent in the attacking. I think he has to be patient. I think he has a great attitude right now, which I like to see, the way that he's talking about his resolve and needing to wait for his opportunity. And when his opportunity comes, he's going to take it. You can see, though, Pulisic's body language is showing you he's not happy. This won't go along too much longer. But the Chelsea board then came out and said, look, we're not selling him. We have no intention of selling him. So I think this is just a case of let's wait and see. The lack of minutes is concerning, but I'm not at the point yet where I'm like, okay, he needs to leave. Get out of Chelsea. I think too often players are looking for that next thing. But in saying that, the clubs that he's been linked to, if it's true, Manchester United, Bayern Munich, Liverpool, those are pretty good clubs that you could go to and step right into and have success. So I'm not worried about Pulisic. It actually builds a lot of character. And for a guy who's had a lot of injury problems over the past year and a half, a little bit of a slow build up again, I don't think will do him any harm in what's going to be a very busy summer and fall.
When you hear fans say, like, oh, when is an American going to do it in the Premier League? Are you and Clint Dempsey ever texting each other, like, should we go to these people's homes and say hi?
Yeah. I don't think, like the current generation of Americans playing in the Premier League think that way. I think the fans have a tendency of being a short-term, you know, bias. And they say, oh, well, you know, Pulisic and, you know, these guys are paving the way for the next Americans. And I'm like, wait, hold on a minute. The guys before that did that. And then even the guys before, you know, myself and Dempsey and Donovan and Timmy. I mean, those guys made it possible for me. But then you even go back to the Brad Friedels and the Hannemans and John Harkes and those guys that have, you know, we have a long history in the Premier League as Americans, but it's been a while since we've had a guy like Pulisic at a top club making a significant impact. And I think that really bodes well for the next generation of hopefully going to some of these really big clubs.
Yeah, I love just simply the fact that Thomas Tuchel has to respond to why he's not playing Christian Pulisic, where now there's an American player that people are like, why aren't you playing the American player? Yeah. Are you
we
sure
want
you
to see him on, which is like, whoa, they like
because,
us?
Because guess what, guys? The best part of this is he's not being talked about as an American player. He's a good soccer player. And you know, we're getting away from the labeling of like, well, he's American. You know, he's not the ability to compete. This guy went for over $70 million. And that's where I think the pressure comes a little bit, because Chelsea are like, hold on a minute, this guy's talented, he's performed, he costs a lot of money, you need to be playing him. Oh, and by the way, he's also American, so sort it out.
If you were playing today, how much you think you'd go for?
Well, I mean, what was Pulisic, 70? So maybe like 72?
Just a little bit, a little bit.
72 cents.
Yeah. Nick Zinn asked at Bolton. Bolton always seemed, which by the way, Bolton low key one of my favorite jerseys with the big Reebok on the shoulder.
Hold on,
always
I'll pull it out in a second. I got one down here.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I love it. If you know any player that was double XL, tell him to hit me up. I'll buy one of them. Bolton always seemed like a hoof it up to the big guy type team. How true was that stereotype? And do you think it hindered your development as a player? And I think that that actually is a great question because it adds players like Daryl Dike that are out there now and Christian Pulisic playing in the wrong position. Do you think that actually hurts your development as a player? And do you think that's true, that stereotype of... I think Owen Coyle was your manager back
then,
right?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because before I got to Bolton, Sam Allardyce was the coach. And that was like, you know, Kevin Davis was a phenomenal striker. He was one of the best players I've ever seen aerially. And you could always rely on that route one. You knew you had it in there. But when Owen Coyle came in, we actually tried to play more. You know, we had Gary Cahill at the back who was at Chelsea for a number of years. And the play would essentially be to split our fullbacks. I would drop deeper, get on the ball. And then, you know, I wouldn't say it hindered my development. I actually think it helped my development because I became more of a two-way box-to-box midfielder where I had to drop back defensively. But we also played this high-intensity, press teams high up the field, try to win the ball back. And, you know, at times that was, yes, it was a bit of a long ball, but that was to get a team on their back foot. And then we would press up and try to win the ball in that final third. So I wouldn't say that when we played the Manchester Uniteds and the Chelseas and, you know, the Liverpools, that we knew we could outpossess them and outpass them. We also at times had to recognize the best way to beat those teams was to play direct, and it was effective. I mean, the year that I actually got my first major injury, we were fifth in the Premier League at the time, and we were competing for European places. And so, you know, we knew what we were good at. We were comfortable within that, but yet I always used to say it was actually easier playing some of the bigger teams at times because they would drop off and almost say, like, look, we know you guys want to play this way, but we're going to try and make you beat us by breaking it down. And we're like, oh, we don't want the ball in the middle of the field. What are you doing? Yeah. And so, you know, that was part of that, you know, the game of chess in a way. And we were effective at what we were, and we were comfortable with that. At times, we struggled to break teams down when they dropped a little bit deeper. But at my development as a player, I think my next step would have hopefully have been to go to a team that was very possession-based. And, you know, I could be that box-to-box midfield. But my I would say growth from the Dynamo to Bolton was exponential. Just being around and playing with some of the best players in all of Europe. Oh, look at that. The bandana. It's in, man.
Hold it down.
The bandana. Hold it down, baby. H-Town.
Okay, another question I wanted to ask. This is a great question from Neil Gavoni. He asked, in light of your hairstyle during the 2008 Olympics, you had some classic hairstyles, by the way. Obviously, nobody did frosted tips better than Stu Holden. who is your favorite male pop artist from the late 90s, 2000s boy band era?
And you can sing yourself because I've seen the photos.
You know, U.S. Soccer actually sent me this ahead of the Olympics. It's kind of cool. You can see with my sweet hairstyle. It was from the opening goal in the Olympics, which was I thought was pretty cool. But you can see my blonde highlights and
you
hair
look
tips
like if
there.
Oasis was a band from California.
Oh, yeah. You know, I thought about bringing the tips back. Maybe I should. But it was my wife, though, that said to me when we were like 5 years dating, she's like, hey, look, there's only room for one in this relationship with highlights. And I was like, so you're gonna dye your hair?
Yeah, would you go, go brunette?
She's like, you need... Yeah, exactly. So, no, look, I was an NSYNC guy. You know, bye, bye, bye. I loved me some NSYNC. And then LFO, The Boys of Summer. You guys know that one?
Of course.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, God, no.
For the boys.
Why remind
of
us of that?
Yeah, it was just the chillest of vibes. Yeah, that
is every now and again, okay. I like to throw on, like, on Spotify, the, you know, the 90s, 2000s pop band in the car with my daughter, my five-year-old, and she's like, Daddy, just turn this off. It's terrible.
Yeah, to them, it sounds like concertos, you know? here's a cool thing. I want to know, we asked Brianna Scurry her top five for women's national team, and I figured, you know, we got an American national team player, a U.S. men's national team player here, that we want to know what your top five or what your five aside is, but let's do Americans that played in the Premier League. Let's let these kids know. You know, it ain't just Pulisic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not just Pulisic in there. And, you know, there's some – this is tough because I might have to leave a couple of my good buddies out of this team here.
You can't think about the group chat. You can't think about the group chat.
No, I know, but the group chat is strong. They come at me. They see everything. But here we go. I'm going to start with
Wait, before you start, just make sure you – post this in the group chat, this segment, please.
Well, Clint's not in the group chat, and I think he's off in the woods somewhere in North Carolina.
Yeah,
like
he's
away
he's
from
done.
Society. His beard's probably like out to here. Okay. I'm going to start with him in my team because Clint is the greatest American. This is actually, we swapped jerseys in this game, and you can see the only way I could get close to him was by ripping his shirt apart. So I wanted the jersey that I ripped.
Was Clint Dempsey in a boy band?
Were you? Yeah. Come on, man. He's the rapper. All right. So Clint's my number one pick here. I'm going to put Tim Howard in there as well. I was debating whether I needed a goalkeeper, but I have to have Timmy in there. I need some type of defensive presence. The other one I'm going to put in there is Christian Pulisic. Now, I've never played with Pulisic. I love watching him play. I think it would be fun to play with him in a five-a-side team because I feel like he'd be really good. I'm going to put myself in there because you know what? My career was cut early due to injuries. I love to get a game anytime I can play. So I'm going to be in that team. You know,
you have one
put
more
a Boltoni
pick
in
you
there.
Put yourself in. You have one more after this.
Yeah,
one more pick.
4 to 6 weeks, you'll be back and good to go. So.
See, now it becomes tricky because do I put Landon Donovan, who played at Everton? Do I put Carlos Bocanegra, who's going to light up the group chat? Or do I put Brian McBride, the OG up front?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many names. I feel like with all that attacking talent, including a creative number 10 like myself, we've got Dempsey and we've got Pulisic. I'm going to put not a defender. So sorry, Los, you're missing out. I'm putting Landon Donovan in there. We're going all out attack, and we're going to leave Timmy stranded in the back to be the goalkeeper. So Landon, Pulisic, Dempsey, Holden, Howard. There you go. Boom.
What
winning squad.
Squad.
What? That's a hell of a squad.
Okay.
Especially with Dempsey free roaming. You know what I mean? Yeah, you don't need him to even
hold on. I'm
going to
rip Clint's shirt a little bit more here.
You know what? An interesting thing that I saw recently, João Cancelo of Manchester City, recently he was asked the question, who is the toughest, who's the toughest defending against?
Oh, it's weird. We didn't play against each other. I didn't know you said me.
But it's cool that he brought you up, though, isn't it?
But he said Christian Pulisic. He said he was the toughest 1v1 to go against because he was so shifty and fast, and he couldn't predict his next movement.
I used to hate playing against guys like that, to be honest, like with the low center of gravity that could just get you off balance. And you do those drills in practice where you do one against one or two against two. And if I'd be spaced out, against that guy, isolate him, I was like, help, help, come weak side, help me. I don't want this guy to just skin me and make me look like a fool here. But, Pulisic is fun to watch. I hope he gets back on the field more regularly with Chelsea here soon because he's a huge part of, we all know, U.S. soccer's future here going forward.
Yeah, speaking of Premier League, it's looking like the majority of this Olympic qualifying team is going to be made up of MLS players. Do you think this is a good opportunity for players that are still in MLS or developing in MLS to show that they also have that, the skill and the ability to play at the senior team? Because it seems like the senior team is going to be 10 out of 11 are going to be, European based.
Oh, 100%. We're going through that, the cyclical shift in the cycles where you look back at what 2020, our team was majority European guys. 2014 then came back MLS. MLS made a big investment in American talent. And now I think your starting 11 for the men's national team is going to be pretty much all European-based players. And it becomes an opportunity for these guys when they get the chance in, like, the Olympic qualifiers and, these games heading into the Gold Cup potentially as well for MLS guys to stake a claim, not just to be a part of the starting lineup, but just the roster in general, and then also guys to get a chance to move overseas. I think you're going to see even more of that. Greg Berhalter told us ahead of the last friendly that it's become dinner table talk. Guys talking about wanting to go to Europe, wanting to play at some of the biggest clubs, seeing guys at Dortmund, at Juventus, at Chelsea, and saying, I want to do the same. So you're going to see a lot more of that in the next couple of years.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had Tanner Tessman of FC Dallas on, and I believe he's 18 or 19 years old. And
these guys on a podcast, right? The Chum Squad or something,
yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
But he was just talking like, that's my next step, Europe. Okay, yeah, I know what the next move is. And seeing this confidence from American players is like, like the instinct is to be like, hey, slow down there,
God's
buddy.
Not there, bro.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it is a part. I mean, I remember, guys, when I was a rookie in MLS, I'd come back from Europe and then wanted to go back. And I remember Dominic Kinnear had a really important conversation with me saying, look, you want to go over there? You think you're capable of doing that? I believe you are, but you need to prove it here first. You need to, you know, get a starting spot. You think being a backup in a team in MLS is going to get you in the Premier League in Europe? It's not. And I almost, you know, that really resonated with me. And when I would read into headlines, when I started to, you know, things started to go well for me, he kept me humbled and grounded and said, be a top five midfielder in Major League Soccer. And then all the things were falling into place. And, you know, I'll take a quick second to my last year, though. I was best 11, all-star team, national team, and I was in a much better place to then go and be able to have the impact that I did. And I think guys sometimes take their eye off the prize and think that I've already made it. You need to go through the steps to get there. And it's an ever-changing market because American players right now are really hot property.
And that's why I respect Stu Holden very much, especially because you did it in a time when, like, YouTube wasn't really that popping. And now some dudes be getting careers just off a good YouTube highlight.
Yeah, a good highlight. Yeah, look, Brian Reynolds, put some techno music on there.
You're good. Brian Reynolds for FC Dallas, guys. He played one season in MLS, and you know he's playing at Roma. So you know it's hard not to see those stories if you're another young player and say, well, that's going to be me. You know, a lot right now people are buying on potential. So you know, potential and techno music. That's kind of the perfect recipe, I think.
Those are the two.
They pair so well together. You can't resist. All right, another one in the books. Thank you so much, Stu Holden, for joining us. And a reminder, go and check out the U.S. Men's Olympic qualifying matches and the entire tournament on Fox Sports. It's going to be great. Stu, you absolutely crushed it, per usual. Is there anything you want to let people know about before we sign off?
Yeah, well, make sure you, first of all, tune in. Big game against Mexico anytime. It's U.S.-Mexico tomorrow. And then the big one where the U.S. will look to qualify for the Olympics this coming summer. And then make sure you stay with us all summer on Fox Sports. We're going to have MLS kicking off. We've got the Gold Cup. We've got World Cup qualifiers in the fall. So, as always, stay with us in FS1, guys. Come on.
All right. Okay. So, Stu, we also need to do a goal celebration GIF. This is becoming tradition on this show. So, obviously, you don't have to do anything too crazy. I don't want you to put too much pressure on yourself. You can bring back a classic. You could do something new. I don't know how strong your Millie Rock is. I don't even know.
Yeah, well, but... you know, I used to
let's
do
say,
the airplane.
Let's say you scored. Let's say you just scored in your five-a-side against the five players you didn't choose who've been hitting you up in the group chat since this aired.
Yeah, that's a tough one. So normally I did the airplane. Maybe it was the stanky leg. I'm kind of restricted in here. So I think what I do right now, I've been working out a lot. So I'm going with the shirt off celebration.
Yes! You know what? It's not just Instagram. This guy's showing his abs on our show.
Okay. You know, I got to give you some credit, Stu, because you're looking a little bit like you and Holden, okay? You're looking like your brother.
I'm trying to look like Plane Bay here, you know?
No. Look like you look like you could pull the plane, Bay.
I told you, the comeback is on for real.
Good God.
I love it. Thank you, Stu.
You want to see a real app? No, I'm joking. I'm not going to do that.
All right, everybody, just a reminder, follow us at Soccer Hooligans on all social media platforms. Follow at Fubo Sports on all socials as well. And make sure to subscribe to the Fubo Sports YouTube channel for full episodes of the show and some more of Nude Stew.
What am I doing, man?
Love it. Let us end the show the way we normally do, as is tradition. So for Stu Holden, my name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
And together, what are we?
The Cooligans!
That's the first shirtless Cooligans ever.